Now tell me about the day itself. You, I think, told me you were off shift at the time.
That's right, I was off duty. I listened to the radio at 8:30 for the news. Obviously, I think the incident occurred 8:20 or thereabouts. And there were reports coming through of the bombing at the barracks at Deal, of which I instantly thought, wow, what's gone on here? You know, this is something quite major. And it just sounded, I think when you're in certain services, you know that something is a bit more serious. So I initially listened to this. They then said that there's people trapped under the buildings and twisted metal and such. So I thought, wow, I wonder if they're going to think of calling on this piece of equipment that we haven't actually taught anybody how to use yet. So I made a phone call to the fire station and fortunately got the colleague who I went on the course with, who actually was on duty. And he said, yeah, actually, they just requested that, you know, this piece of kit is taken across there because there's a lot of cutting needs doing. At which I said, right, give me 5 minutes and I'll be down there. And I was in the car and down at the fire station, because I only lived up in Hawking, so it wasn't too far. Once I got in the fire station, I was briefed by my colleague, Paul Vanstone, who told me how major an incident this was developing into. During that time, he'd already loaded the kit onto a Land Rover, a brand new Land Rover that we'd just been issued with in those days. Got my kit and jumped on the Land Rover with him, and off we went to Deal.
Was the kit pretty large?
Oh yeah, it was two-man portable. It's probably a box of about a metre long by half a metre tall, half a metre wide.
Pretty heavy?
Fairly heavy, yes. Along with that, we also took some spare cylinders as well, the great big J-type cylinders, you know, the 6-foot tall ones. So we took some spare cylinders as well, because we had the capacity at the fire station in there. So we were, in effect, a self-contained unit of hot cutters, so to speak. We set ourselves off on the way, and humour being what it is, unfortunately, when we got to Ringwald, we broke down. Now, this was, you know, we were going there hell for leather to get there, because we could hear from the radio messages coming back from the incident, and we broke down in this brand new Land Rover. We were near a pub, so we went walking into the pub. Obviously, the publican knew what had been going on, because there's everybody flying past his pub, and we're saying, look, you know, we need to get a phone here, because this is long before mobile phones. We need to phone our control to tell her what's happened, because we've broken down. And they said, what, you're on the way to the bombing? Yeah, I'm afraid so, yeah, but we've got some really important kit we need to get there. Fortunately, now this is, bearing in mind, this is probably 9 o'clock in the morning in a pub, there was a rag and bone man in there with his rag and bone lorry outside. And this chap, smashing guy, really was, he said, well, he says, I've got a bit of old chain if you want, I'll tow you there. So you have to make that decision. What do you do? Do you get there a bit slowly, or do you not get there at all, or have to wait for a breakdown truck to come and get you? And I immediately said, if that's what you can do, that'd be fantastic. Great idea. So picture this, all this incident going on, and this brand new Land Rover, two firefighters in it. The blue lights were just about still working, because there was just enough power, being towed down the road on the back of a rag and bone lorry with all sorts of rusty iron hanging out the back and left, right and centre. But fortunately, the guy was great, he got us there, and we managed to arrive at the incident, albeit on the back of a rag and bone lorry. But we got there, and to be confronted by mass devastation, something I'd never experienced before. Not knowing really what to expect, it was something that was, you just turn up and go, wow. This is something over and above what we normally do.
So you arrive, do you liaise with other firemen at the time on the spot? And what becomes your role
right
then?
Okay. When we arrived, at any incident, we'll always set up a command and control centre. And invariably, that will be near the police command and control centre and the services liaison area. So we booked in and saw the officer in charge, who was a chap called Peter Coombs, but he was the senior fire officer in charge at the time. We then explained to him, because he knew about this kit, because one of his roles was development of kit for the Channel Tunnel, and he was the one who requested it. So we said, here we are, here's the kit, we're over there, let's know what you want. It was really down to him to decide when he needed us. So we were held back specifically for the role of get in there and, you know, cut these thick gauge pieces of metal.
Can you remember what time you were there?
This probably would have been, by the time we'd got the tow in, probably about 9:15. So this was probably getting on for an hour after the initial explosion.
At what stage are you brought forward, and what is your role then?
What they asked us to do was to go round, because there was various pockets of rescue going on. There was groups of firefighters throughout the whole site where there were people trapped. So there was probably 4 to 5 people trapped at the time, where you had rescue parties trying to deal with certain areas. And what he said was, go and have a look at what the situation's like and see if once we start moving this stuff, it's going to need cutting. Because there was a lot of reinforcing throughout it all, obviously, because it was mainly concrete roof construction. And come back to me and say, yeah, these areas where we think we can assist. A lot of it was obviously just done by bare hands, by firefighters and, you know, staff from the service staff from the barracks, actually just manhandling broken down bits of rock and bricks.
Were you aware of casualties around there when you did your little recce?
Yes, there were certain areas that we were told there were casualties. There were certain areas that were confirmed fatalities. So we knew where the priorities were for obviously rescuing live casualties. In those initial stages, in the live rescues, we were involved in when they were starting to lift things, if there was a bit of cutting to be done, we'd be involved in the cutting.
So you were into action fairly quickly?
Fairly soon on, initially.
Can you give a very simple explanation of how the lance actually works?
Yeah, the thermic lance was, thermic arc it was actually called, is a plastic tubing that is hollow in the middle. It has a small steel cable running up the middle of it that is ignited by passing pure oxygen over it. It then ends up burning at the end to a very hot temperature. It actually burns back about 2 foot per minute, and that will cut any gauge of thick metal of any type.
And did you find some fairly thick metal to cut there?
We did in the latter stages, but the early stages it was just very small half inch reinforcing.
Were you aware at the time that there was a crane or a crane had arrived, or did it arrive obviously after you got there?
Yeah, the crane took some time to get there, and that's when we was involved in the recovery of casualties rather than the rescue of casualties. The crane was there, and yes, we were involved with the crane. As it was lifting these great big slabs of concrete, we were cutting the reinforcing to enable the slabs to be lifted and taken out. Later on, it was recovery. It was a recovery of bodies. So therefore, you had nobody in that vicinity whilst you were lifting these big slabs out of the way. And that's where we got involved with hot metal cutting again to actually cut the reinforcing strips and the thick gauge metal that's holding these slabs in place. So we were cutting as they were lifting, in effect, which in itself was rather dangerous, because at one stage, when you cut the last reinforcing strip, the whole lot will shape round towards you, you know? So I suppose you could say that was a dangerous situation to be in, I suppose, but it had to be done.
Did you have a near shave yourself?
No, it was very controlled, as is the fire service generally, you know. People see the fire service as a dangerous occupation. I don't think so, because we're trained to know the risks. And if we know the risks, then you don't risk your life unnecessarily. And yes, there are times when you have to, but on that occasion it never arose, because the most dangerous part of it all was during recovery.
With you saying that the arc burns at 2 feet a minute?
Yes.
How much capacity do you have? Do you have several of these?
Of these cables?
Yes.
Yes, we had, I think when we took over there, we took about a dozen cables. So we was well prepared, along with a big quantity of oxygen as well. So we could have, you know, we could have done a hell of a lot more than we did in the end.
Would you say that without having that piece of equipment, it might have delayed things?
It would have made things more difficult, certainly.
And you were there on site for how long?
We finally got away about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I think it was, by the time that all of the recovery had been completed, and there was no further, you know, no further casualties reported. Everything had been moved that needed to be moved, and that was sort of called a halt from our perspective then.
I was told that you've got this moment where fire are prepared to hand over control to the police, who are then desperate to find evidence.
It's unfortunately, in any instance, you do get conflict of interest, don't you? One particular service will be very keen on one side of it, the other one will want this side of it. If you take something basic like a road crash, for example, the paramedics find it very important that you come out, you get that casualty out in exactly the right way. The fire service will want to get that casualty out as quickly as they possibly can, and the police will be saying, is it all right for us to open the road yet, because this is causing mass congestion throughout the rest of the county. So you're always going to have those conflictions, I suppose, but the signs of good liaison is that you all work through those.
Who actually takes the lead when you've got this sort of situation you've developed? Is it fire, police or ambulance? Who is there a senior...
Well, within an
incident.
Well, don't forget, the scene right from the start, particularly the Deal bombing, was a crime scene. Crime scene is taken care of by the police. So they have, on that particular one, they've got primacy. So
right.
They will be in charge of that. We, i.e. the fire service, are then in charge of extrication and getting the casualties out, along with the paramedics, who tell us how they want that person out. It's all down to, as long as you've got good liaison and good communications and good working practices between all of the services, it works very well. Not all the time, but most of the time it does work very well.